This is the Popmatic Podcast for January 27th, 2016. Yes. And? This is the Popmatic Podcast where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me today are...
Chuckles the Clown.
Hey, clowns. I'll be right back.
Mike.
Amanda.
Have we had this podcast configuration before?
I don't think so.
I don't believe so. Usually it's just the only three-peats we had, I think, were just Jeremy and you and me.
Today's episode is all improvised. Why?
Why not?
Yeah.
why did we pick improv?
Why did we pick improv?
I don't know why not. But why is because Saturday, January 30th at 2 p.m., Nashville Improv Company is going to be here putting on a free show in our auditorium.
So we should come back and learn how to do this properly.
Cool. Yeah, yes. We can get pointers after yes. We record this.
Yes. I think this has the potential to be the worst show ever. And
fingers crossed.
Jeremy and Bill are high-fiving wherever they are.
We're off to a really good start because of weather. I was late and no one is here except for us. So it'll be good.
We get bonus points.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. And of course, I was probably relying on Jeremy talking for like 75% of this episode. He's not here.
That's what we were all banking on.
So...
The Jeremy Show with special guests, the rest of us.
How we were going to organize this improv episode is we don't know what the main theme is yet, but Jesse, my podcast premises, has emailed me the theme. So when we start the beginning segment, the first main segment before Tickle My Fancy, we're going to find out what the theme is and what we're supposed to talk about, and we're going to make it up. On the fly.
Be prepared next week, kids, because we'll maybe a legendary amount of corrections.
This much podcast, this much correction.
Yeah.
Sorry I didn't get this to you sooner, blah, blah, blah. I put the topic and five items on the second and third page of the attached Word document. First and fourth are blank. Oh, he's so thoughtful. I thought that way you could print it out and look at the contents, or you can forward it to someone else and have them print it for you. For the five items, I included questions to explain why I included the item. Feel free to ignore my questions. That part was really difficult.
Okay, if Jesse thinks it's hard...
This is going to be an interesting week.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because Jesse's like Jeopardy smart.
First page, secret document. Second page, secret document. Today's topic is sequels.
Oh. Tootally terrific.
Part two.
Dun, dun, dun.
Five items for you to consider. Now, there's only three of us, so we're going to try to get through all five.
Well, we could
what if
pick
I have
the ones
my own
that we
item?
Like. Yeah. Let's see.
Because I sequels? Could pretty much guarantee that what I want to talk about is not going to be on that list.
Are you ready?
Sequels that
yeah,
are good.
Do it.
Okay. The very first one. Fast and the Furious, how many are too many?
Yes.
I've seen four of those, I guess. I'm the only one who could talk about them.
I've seen them. I've seen some of them.
First one's
Because every time I go to my brother-in-law's house, he has them on.
The first one's so bad, I was like, how do they make sequels to this? And then it's like, you know, it was better when it like came. Anyway, we can talk about that when we get to it. Okay.
No, we're talking now.
We're talking about it now.
Oh, that's
oh boy.
Ready to go.
Improv time. Oh, boy. Well, the first one's so bad. It's all about car jacking and bad crime. And then around part five, they rebooted the series and made it like this weird spy.
But they have really cool cars.
Cryptic thing.
And it's got Vin Diesel.
Cars are things with wheels that go. I don't care. On fist punching action.
I think there's some pretty cool. Like, I don't know which number it is, but what's the one where they're in the tunnels in Mexico, the smuggling tunnels, and they keep having like car races through the tunnels.
Oh, I think that may be like two or three or something.
Yeah, it's down in the lower numbers.
Yeah,
I've seen that one like twice.
Oh, ooh.
I know.
We'll see. I like the fifth one because it gets ridiculously silly when the race cars have chains behind them and they're like are attached to safes from the banks in Rio. Oh. And they're like going across like sides of traffic like giant flails. And I'm all like, you know, there are people in those cars, right? Like,
that's how I'm going to come to work tomorrow.
It's pretty amazing.
Wait, in the back of your truck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, by that point, I was just like, okay, I'm on board. This is ridiculous and silly.
They're not going to change your life, but they are enjoyable.
I also like that for, you know, a hugely successful series that it's incredibly diverse. You know,
yeah.
At first I was like, oh, no, these are guys that are like muscle-bound meatheads from like garages in California. Who cares? But then as the series progresses, you know, they seem to be likable dudes.
I think they've got pretty good girls, too. Like, because the girls are not the blonde, typical Barbie type. I mean, they're...
Yeah, punching in the face.
Yeah, they're actually a pretty good part of the storyline.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I wish they would teach me how to drive, because they're awesome.
I've never seen any of them. The reason that they keep making sequels is because there's an audience that's all about the cars. I and it's just like, all right, there's like a, you know, like, what's that British TV show where they soup stuff up?
Top Gear.
Yeah,
Top Gear.
Top Gear. So like
there's an American version too, I think.
The Top Gear crowd, right? And I think it's probably to their benefit that they got so absurd and sort of became these action, over the top, crazy stuff as opposed to just like Grand Theft Auto,
I think a lot of people, including me, started watching it like an ironic thing, you know, like, oh, this is so silly. And then after a while, it actually became kind of cool. That's the peril of watching something ironically, at least for me. You know, it's like you watch it because it's silly, and then it's like, you know, I kind of like this, like, legitimately.
Are they done making them? I mean,
no.
They lost Paul Walker.
They just announced Fast 8.
Yes, so, but 7 was the last one with Paul Walker.
Yeah.
Okay.
As long as they keep making money, like, proportional to the budget, they'll keep making them.
Yeah, every budget.
You know, Michael, keep watching.
The last one made a ton of money.
Of course.
Yeah, in a crowded theater with people having
with
their cell phones in my
iPads.
Face. Yeah.
It is worth noting that Justin Lin, who directed one of them, which one? I don't know which one. He directed one of them.
I want to say the last one.
He is directing Star Trek Beyond, so nerd cred to him. But, of course, that makes people very nervous, right, that he's directing the new Star Trek.
Hey, totally a favor of getting out of J.J. Abrams' hands.
He directed Fast and Furious 6.
That was close.
And Fast 5, which was that? Was that Fast and Furious 5?
Yes.
Okay. So he directed Fast and Furious 5 and 6. And he's directing the new Star Trek.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. Hopefully that won't be as...
Cars in Space.
Yeah, as mediocre as the other two Star Trek movies. All right, we're moving on. Jesse's improvised topic number 2. I've already glanced at it. Oh, I can't even wait.
Oh, no.
Jay-Z's Blueprint Part 2. Is it really a sequel? Do you care? Probably not. To either question.
Wow. You guys have the floor. I listened to part of the White Album once. Didn't care for it. That's about
it. The gray album.
It shows you how much that I enjoyed it. So, you guys, go ahead.
I haven't listened to the Blueprint. I mean, I'm not a big Jay-Z fan in general. Like, I respect him as a businessman, but, like, I don't like his rap cadence that he uses. So
for me, I got into hip-hop in the 90s. I was white, and there was this whole, like, street versus backpacker dichotomy, which was totally arbitrary in this racist construction. And Jay-Z was in the wrong category, so I never cared. And so his early albums that everyone says is genius, I didn't listen to. He was already this huge, mega superstar, so he's just sort of like so big he's off my radar.
Mm-hmm.
And but he does own the company that manages Grimes, and him and Grimes have a positive business relationship.
That's cool.
I think he's doing a lot more now with finding artists and doing that than furthering his own musical career. I think he's kind of trying to step back at least a little bit to kind of not take their spotlight.
Yeah. A lot like Donald Trump, I think he has enough money he can do whatever he wants. So, okay.
You're fine.
All right. I think he did the score part of it to The Great Gatsby, the Baz Luhrmann thing a couple of years ago, which I kind of liked.
Jay-Z did the score on...
He just blew my mind.
Like, those three things, like The Great Gatsby, Baz Luhrmann, and Jay-Z did not go together in my brain.
Yeah.
So.
No, yeah, they'd have these like rap interviews and stuff, and it's set in the 20s, you know.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, yeah, sure, you know, like you do.
And... Benjamin Franklin's field, fold it just for the thrill. Go numb until I can't feel. All my pop just peel. Stock market just crash. Now I'm just the bill. History don't repeat itself, it rhymes. 1929 steel.
right like Mark Twain. Jake Gatsby, I park things. Yellow cars, yellow gold like slick brick. Steel tip on four fours. Four fours at the 4-0. With 4-0. Dollars fall on the skin. Some might call us in. Politicians all move.
Third Man Records put out the soundtrack.
Is that his company?
That's Jack White's company.
Oh, okay.
Nashville fail.
Yeah. I like Jack White, too. I should have known that.
I'll blame it on the weather.
Okay.
But they put out that really cool, they actually put out like a platinum record with like a hand-cut laser design by Bryce, don't remember his name.
You're looking at me like I'm going to know.
Bryce Dallas Howard.
There will be a correction. Yes, exactly. Bryce, the artist who did The Face, I can't remember what it was called now, but everyone in Nashville did like a portrait, and it was up in the gallery.
And then
they did the big face in the lobby. So Bryce. Okay, enough of this. The artist's name is Bryce McLeod. He's from the Isle of Printing. The portrait project, which he did citywide and was on display here at the library, was called This Is Our Town. I don't believe he designed the Gatsby album cover, but he did oversee the laser cutting of the wooden sleeve of the platinum version of the album cover. This very beautiful piece of art was displayed here at the library for a bit a few years ago. If I'm wrong about any of this stuff, someone that is listening knows, just leave the corrections in the comments. Bryce is a friend of the library, or at least he used to be.
I love you, brother. I'm sorry I can't remember your name. So, one of the most successful artists in Nashville, Bryce. Yeah,
cool. I also heard. I thought too that didn't Jay-Z, he heard or saw the Ridley Scott film American Gangster, and then he went into the studio and just like improvised the soundtrack to that too.
That'd be cool.
That's
pretty cool.
I will have to fact check that.
American Gangster's music was composed by Mark Streitenfeld and Hank Shockley. But when Jay-Z saw an early screening of the movie, he was so inspired, he went to the studio and recorded his own concept album inspired by the movie, also called American Gangster. The film's official soundtrack and Jay-Z's album were released on the same day.
All right, Nerd Ass number 3.
Do it.
Sure.
Janet Ivanovich and Sue Grafton. Are series just a bunch of sequels?
What do you think, Amanda?
I think... Have you guys read any of them? Either of them?
I've seen the covers.
Read the back of the book.
Yeah, I've cataloged them.
I think it's just part of one story that's ongoing.
It's
a big arc.
They're not sequels? Your answer is saying no.
I would say no. I would say that they're... It's kind of like that you guys last week were talking about standalone, like the big arc for X-Files or the monster of the week.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a little bit of both. Like, there's parts of the book that stand alone, but most of it is part of the bigger. Like, you couldn't just jump in at number 23 and be happy.
Yeah, okay, you'd have to, I dig that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd have to go back because, I mean, you'd be okay, but there'd be a lot that you would miss.
Is the Sue Grafton ones like? I mean, it's one long continuous series, but the Ivanovich one—it seems like maybe you could be okay. Like,
you'd be okayer, I think. Yeah. I've only read the first one of Sue Grafton, so I haven't actually gone back for more. So
okay.
I started at A. Janet Ivanovich, you'd miss quite a bit because there's a lot of like standing jokes that happen every time, and so that you wouldn't get that it's funny because you don't get the backstory.
Have you tried any of the J.D. Robb?
I've read all of those, yes.
Same
idea.
Are they, like, way better or, like...
Different.
Okay.
J.D. Robb is a little bit more... It's kind of in... Like, if you take paranormal romance and then you take, like, Janet Ivanovich, it's kind of in the middle. Like, it's not really paranormal, but it's time travel and, like, it's all this, like, future mystery cop thing.
Ooh. Urban fantasy.
Yeah, and there's a lot more amorous activity.
Yeah, let's say I have some fellow employees who have been really gunning for me to try J.D. Robb series. For a long time.
If I had to pick between J.D. Robb, Janet Ivanovich, and Sue Grafton for you, I would say probably J.D. Robb.
Yeah. That's what I figured.
Maybe
someday.
I don't know about now either, but I've as far as like the whole like genre fiction tight, like fast paced narrative, like I've heard so many librarians have told me that Nora Roberts is just the shit.
Yeah, J.D.
I mean,
Robb
writes like a million books a year.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. The pseudonym of
Yeah, J.D. Rahman, yeah. Norma Robinson.
So, like, she's insane. Like, I had no idea who she was until I started working here. And then I look at, like, the... yeah.
Anyway.
And then I look at, like, the, you know, that page there. It tells you, like, other works by them, like, in some of her books. And it's just page upon page.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she writes more than Stephen King. Stephen King wishes he could write as much as she does.
I mean,
it is insane.
Because she has the big series, the J.D. Robb series. But then, like, her Nora Roberts, like, she has, like, shorter,
yeah, she
like,
has, like,
three-book series and, yeah. like, standalones and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So.
And then we're constantly reprinting them. And,
like, okay. Bibliophile fail for... not knowing who she was before you started working here. Like, what? Like, you went to the Atlanta Science Fiction Mystery Bookshop,
right.
like, road trips to go there, and, yeah. like, there had to be some of her books there, right?
That was at a stage of my life where it was written by a girl, Chris.
Girls are icky.
Yeah, I write stuff made for boys.
By boys, for boys.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I'm going to say...
I would be much more open to trying out J.D. Robb at this point in my life than I was 20 years ago.
Plus, the first one's called Naked in Death, so.
I'm intrigued. kind of.
I'm not necessarily the romance elements, but the tight narrative, the fast-paced, you know, like how to plot a story that I think guys like you and Jeremy often apply to, like, male crime writers that write, like, 10,000 in a series. Like, I think you talked about Lawrence Block. You were starting
to
think. Like, I think that those same qualities could easily just be applied to Jenna Ivanovich and Sue Grafton. I'm mansplaining about sexism in
publishing. Just add, too, that the thing I like about all three of these is that they haven't become formulaic yet. Like, I'm, you know, 20 books deep in on the J.D. Robb and Stephanie Ivanovich. And, like, because you get tired of TV when you're like, okay, like, especially with, like, House, when they're like, okay, it can't be that one because it's the first patient. It can't be that one, it's the third patient. It can't be that, oh, here's the fourth patient, okay.
Yeah, once the series becomes formulaic, I just kind of give up.
Yeah, and they haven't yet.
I am not saying that I disbelieve you, but you're like, well, you're pushing up against my, like, wait, what? But, it's all good.
Okay,
it's all good.
It might not be as blatantly formulaic, let's say that. Because it doesn't bother me.
I know Ivanovich like pulls from stories from like actual stories of like criminals and bounty hunters and things from.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I think she hangs out at the local police precinct, and wherever she's somewhere in the Northeast.
Well, I feel like I'm so cool about bounty hunters because I know it because I read Jenna Ivanovich, and I'm sure that it's like you know I play one on TV type of stuff. But
I'm totally like an expert.
That's
stuff.
Right. I could be a bounty hunter in my free time.
Dog, the bounty hunter's not doing it right. You know, it's actually not supposed to be like that.
I'm gonna throw this out here because I think it relates to the sequels question. But isn't like all series fiction and genre fiction, to a certain degree, it relies on a formula. But then it's like when you tweak the formula,
yeah,
I mean,
maybe
that's
it. Yeah,
I'm just.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's cool.
Maybe you go in expecting a little bit of a formula, but then...
I don't disbelieve you, but you're testing me. Okay, that's all I'm saying. All right, you guys ready to move on?
Number four.
Oh, wait.
Number four. Whatever. Five.
Wait. I cannot even believe he went there. Are you guys ready?
Let's do it.
Sure, okay.
The New Testament.
Whoa.
Okay.
This is the blasphemous...
This is where we get in trouble and God strikes us down with lightning.
Oh, no.
A sequel to the Old Testament... Is that rude to ask? That was number four.
Not rude to ask, but I'm wondering where the heck it came from.
Wow.
No, it's not a sequel. And except with the fact that it comes after. But
I guess it depends on your faith, I guess.
Okay.
That sounds like a...
Okay. It is a sequel. The sequel to that is Quran. I'm done. Okay.
Well, hey, Book of Mormon, bro.
And I'm out. I'm out. And then the sequel to that is the Book of Mormon. Okay, I'm out. Are you guys ready to number five?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay.
That was the whole number four, was that?
Number four was the New Testament, a sequel to the Old Testament.
Yeah, that's Hong
Is it
Kong.
Rude to ask?
He's just trying to cause trouble.
Yeah, this is yieldy troll.
What about Chariots of the Gods, right? Or the Ancient Aliens book. What's that book?
We used to have one called Gods or Astronauts.
Daniken, I think.
Just watched the Larry Cohen film, God Told Me To. Bills, that's a shout out to you, Bill, since you're in here today, and it's about the whole Chariot of the Gods deal. All right, number five, you guys ready?
Can't get worse.
Yeah. Oh man.
Moby Dick and other books you wish had sequels. Okay.
I don't wish Moby Dick. I've never made it through Moby Dick.
See, books I wish had a sequel.
I would have put To Kill a Mockingbird in that club, but. Now there is a sequel, and I'm sorry that there is one. So,
I mean, I was going to go back to the Cloud Atlas well, but he does seem to like be doing that sort of thing a lot, the David Mitchell and his bone clocks and that sort of thing.
What sort of thing? I don't know.
That kind of using history, like, you know, there'll be a character at a certain point in history, and they'll be like the viewpoint character, and they have their own little vignette, and then it gets to the next character who actually has something to do with that previous character, and so on and so forth. Except in Bone Clocks, it was used differently, but I kind of thought it would be kind of neat to have, like, different perspectives from different people, like Cloud Atlas. That's because I like Cloud Atlas so much. Yeah. It seems like most of the books that I really like have sequels, so, you know, or really bad sequels.
Or sequels by other people.
Yeah. You know, when I was a kid, I really liked Dracula. But, like, you know, so many pastiches and such haven't written about that.
Yeah, because Stoker didn't write anything.
Yeah, he wrote other things.
But not, like in thing. The, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, no, I don't remember the title, so I think it's called Dracula's Guest. They cut out, he had, like, this huge, like, 100-page, like, beginning, part of the beginning of Dracula that was cut out by the publisher that they added in later on. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, a lot of times, they don't, like, keep that in, but you can have it, like, as a separate story about him, like, going to the castle, you know, and what do you think, villager of that castle on Yieldy Hill? Don't go there, it's spooky! Well, I'm going anyway.
It's like the one in Dracula, then he's like, but I'm expected.
I have an appointment.
That's right, I'm scheduled. I don't have a good answer for that.
Yeah, off the top of my head, it's like, you know, I'm trying to...
Because most of the stuff I read does have a sequel.
Well, I think that he's punking us, because I don't think that Moby is not a book that we wish had a sequel, right? Okay.
Nah.
So he's like...
I've tried twice to read it.
So thanks.
I made it past the first page.
For throwing that octopus out on the ice, Jesse.
Call me out of here.
I'd give him 3 for 5. His 3 questions were good. 2 were...
Like I said, it was really hard to come up with them, you know. We could talk about sequels that we like or something.
Books that I wish had sequels. Hild by Nicola Griffith was the autobiography of Saint Hilda. I think that...
The Hildegard of Bingen?
No.
No, different.
Of Saint Hilda, 6th century British monk. I don't think it was... Not the composer.
The mystic.
Not the composer.
Okay,
no.
Different.
So I don't think that's the same person anyway. We'll have to do a correction.
Research.
So, and I think the idea is that the sequel was planned, but those are very, very detailed, and I don't know how many it sold. Like the first one, I think that might depend on that. Mm-hmm. Other books that I wish had sequels? You know, that book Station 11 by Hilary St. John Mantel, like that is a very interesting world that was like, post-apocalypse, but about people that are involved in the arts as opposed to people that are involved in shooting zombies in the head.
Mm.
And so that book ended right when the people were about to, in the distance, they saw that a city had power again, like had lights. So they were thinking about sending a party out to I think that there's a good potential for sequels there. I think that's pretty much it.
Yeah, they like stuff that comes to mind and stuff that I'd rather not have a sequel.
I can think of a bunch I wish didn't have a sequel.
There are some series that I wish had like a definitive like ending. You know, like I mean, Terry Pratchett passed away recently, and I mean, you know, it'd be kind of nice to have like a denouement to like Discworld, or that there's a fantasy writer named Fritz Lieber who had a series called The Pfefferd and the Grave Mauser, which is amazing. It's very like, you know, old school sword and sorcery. You know, there's like a thief guy and a barbarian guy, and they have adventures in the countryside. And the last book was really weird. There's like themes I cannot get into in a family-friendly podcast. And I was like, this is it. This is the end. Because he just died, you know. It's like, I mean, he can't like... So there's no like ending. Which, I mean, you know, I can't really fault, you know. I don't want to be one of those fans who says that the creator has to bow to my every whim. Because there are fans like that. But it would be kind of nice to have a capper sometimes.
I'm excited about the Star Wars sequels. I thought the ending, I mean, like the very last scene of The Force Awakens was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really care about the whole other part of the beginning part. But
I'm curious to see where that goes. I'm really curious about Mad Max The Wasteland. Oh, boy. Yeah.
You'll have to watch that one for
Fires me. And explosions. I'll see it 5 times in the theater. It'll be great. This time it's backwards in Esperanto. I'm there. Yeah, witness me.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Brian.
Brian.
What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well, Maybe the library has it, maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's tickling our fancy.
And we're going to improvise and tell you why it's tickling our fancy.
Because we don't believe in notes. So I have been reading a bunch of different books, and kind of I was inspired by Brian's stats that he put out that we don't talk about enough romance books. So today I'm going to talk about a romance book. It's called The Royal We, and it's basically a novelization of Prince William and the Duchess Catherine and their, you know, romance as they kind of went through college together. The authors are Heather Cox and Jessica Morgan, and they take some liberties. I mean, it's not like they were following them, you know, the royal couple around with a notepad, but, I mean, it's pretty close to their storyline. I didn't expect it to pull me in quite as much. Like, when I would stop reading it and kind of go away from it, like, I'd find myself thinking about it, and I'd be thinking about being at Oxford and being, you know, I was like, what is going on? So it did kind of suck me in a little bit. It was pretty good. It's long. I mean, it's about 400 pages, so it's a little longer than a normal romance book, but I did find it enjoyable, and I will admit that I'm not one who, you know, reads British tabloids or stayed up and watched their wedding, and that's not really me. So if you are that person, you definitely need to read it. If you're just looking for a good book, I would check it out. It's called The Royal We.
Would I like this book?
Almost. Because, I mean, there's a lot of, like, you know, royalty stuff and that kind of stuff that is into it besides just the, oh, I love you, William. Oh, I love you, Kate. So.
Our love is forbidden, for you are a commoner and I am the Prince of England.
I'm a traditionalist. It's totally unacceptable. I don't approve of that marriage.
Then maybe this isn't your book.
You should have married the crown princess of Norway. And
maybe
not some...
you should read it so that you like her more. Because it's written from her perspective. I mean, it's a little bit of an omniscient narrative.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
I read the book about Anne who married Prince George. What was her name?
That would be Edward the Eighth. The Duke of Windsor.
Who he abdicated for her. What was her name?
Oh, the...
This is a...
Wallace Simpson.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a quote from her in here, too.
The author's name was Anne. I don't remember.
Okay.
So
yeah, the Wallace Simpson book.
I read the latest biography of Wallace Simpson.
That Woman, The Life of Wallace Simpson, Duchess of Windsor, by Anne Seba.
And that was a bad book. Like, even my book club...
I said, did your book club read it?
Yeah, and like, you know, I'm probably like the grumpiest person in my book club, and even my book club didn't like it that much.
Was it a novel or nonfiction?
It was nonfiction.
That was nonfiction.
A lot of people are like, this is like a revisionist biography of her and her life. And,
yeah, I've heard just she wasn't a great person. Well, did they try to make her sound like a little bit more romantic and nice as opposed to...
Well, okay, so it's a little bit of a spoiler, and I don't want to steal your thunder because you read a good book about royal romance, right? Okay. The author implies that perhaps Wallace Simpson was intersex, but doesn't provide any evidence about that. It was like this weird, salacious tabloid thing in a book that was kind of be presented as a serious biography. And then also Prince George.
That would be Edward the Eighth, the Duke of Windsor.
Comes off like a complete scumbag. So,
from what I understand, yes.
I don't know.
There's a reason why they shuttled him off to the Bahamas to be really quiet during World War II.
So the version of her, I think, was more sympathetic.
Oh, I think you mean Edward the VII.
There you go.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the name.
Future correction.
Yes. I don't know anything.
There's so many Edwards and Georges. I could be wrong about the number, but I'm pretty sure it's the VII.
I don't know. Karen?
Who was her dad? Who was Elizabeth's dad? Was he?
He was a George.
I think he was George.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And so yeah.
His brother was
and
Edward.
Edward's father was a George.
Come on, Sam is a lovely name.
Jeez.
Rupert is nice, I hear.
Albrecht.
I obviously know nothing about this, but The Royal We by
Heather Cox and Jessica Morgan.
Awesome book. Go deep.
Yeah, Henry VIII's older brother before it was named Arthur, and he died. So, you know, Henry VIII was raised as like a wild child. Who cares, you know, because he wasn't going to become king.
He pretty much
lived
his whole life
care.
That way.
And then it was like, oh, wait, I got to become king? Oh, crap.
They kind of talk about that in the book, too, because it's it's the heir and the spare. The spare kind of like does it on purpose to kind of take the flack off of the heir. So.
And that's interesting. I didn't know about
Prince Harry now, right?
Yeah, Prince Harry. Yeah, I can't remember his name in the
book. There are stories
the
about him that...
Well, I like this one, too, because the prince's name was Nicholas, and that's my husband's name, too.
Oh.
So.
All right, Mike, what's tickling your fancy?
So, I thought it'd be interesting over at, I want to say it's Belmont University. Uh-oh. Future correction. They're showing every winter they do a Shakespeare festival thingy. And this month, there's one more weekend. You guys can see it. The upcoming Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they're doing King Lear. And I thought it'd be kind of fun. I mean to go. And this year in April is the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death. And I thought it'd be interesting to, like, you know, have a year of Shakespeare. And, you know, I was thinking of, like, reading some of his obscure plays, maybe watching some of the more obscure movies. So that may be coming up on the Tickled by Fancy segment for the next year. It'll be like when I recommended music you hate. Now I'll recommend plays you don't like. Oh, boy.
We can count on you, Mike.
Yeah. I'm the glue that holds the podcast together.
Is that a challenge? What's certainly my fancy is kind of the opposite of King Lear at Belmont. A few days ago, I finally got around to watching Magic Mike by Steven Soderbergh.
Oh, wow. And, the first one?
The first one.
Not the XXL
the
or
first
whatever?
One.
Yeah, I heard that it's like a like it gets like serious stuff about like the economic meltdown with stripping.
Good evening. You live here?
Yeah.
Yeah? What's your name?
Kim.
Kim, can you move back for me, please? We keep getting complaints of noise and underage drinking. Everybody sit down. We're going to be here for a while. You don't have anything sharp on you that I can stick myself with, do you?
No.
Good. Because I do.
The businesses that I manage, they deal exclusively in cash.
Wow. Busy guy.
We are welcome to stage the one, the only...
Magic Mike.
You are the husband that they never had. You are that dreamboat guy that never came along.
Yeah, that's a cool table. Are you Maynard?
Hmm?
You should sell these things.
That's actually the idea.
My sister?
Mike.
Nice
thank
one.
You, Mike.
So how do you know my brother?
I'm an entrepreneur. I manage a few businesses.
Trying to hit on my sister?
Okay, good talk.
Entrepreneur stripper or stripper entrepreneur?
Either one.
I was hoping this was all a joke.
It's pretty funny.
I'm just trying to figure out why stripping.
Women, money, and a good time.
Just try not to forget about the people who exist in the daylight. The non-vampire.
Right. Are we fighting? Is this our first fight?
So if you could do the one thing that make you the happiest every morning.
The custom furniture.
Custom furniture. So you must be really good with your hands. I just can't be around your lifestyle.
Am I Magic Mike right now talking to you? I'm not my lifestyle.
Do you believe what you're saying right now?
That too, the law says that you cannot touch.
But I think I see a lot of lawbreakers up in this house.
Wow, that's a lot of ones.
There were some fives in there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No 20s?
You don't want to know what I have to do for 20s.
So you're going to come to the show tonight?
No.
You're going to come to the show tonight?
No.
You just said over there that you like the show.
That doesn't mean I'm going to go again. I don't...
there's not really plot.
Well...
I heard it's like darker than you'd expect. I thought it was the stripper movie, and then like apparently there's a lot of like, you know, economic downturn, sad face stuff. I'm all like, really?
It's a movie about male strippers for sure. but I guess I've kind of like I'm drinking the Kool-Aid about Channing Tatum. That's his name, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
But he's like a serious actor, not just a face. So. I don't like Steven Soderbergh's movies. Like, I tried to watch Che, and I turned it off. I didn't
found
like,
he's very hit or miss.
I
really like, The Limey was one of my favorite movies of last year. Amazing. And apparently a lot of people don't like that. I was like, oh.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Story of my life. Ocean's 11's kind of fun.
That just means you have a point of view, and that's good. But, man, I really like this movie. And one of the things that it kind of does is it's kind of genre-less. So in one ways, it's like just this character study of like who in the heck is a male stripper in these like sort of weird scumbag tourist pockets of Florida. But then it's also like a romance between. Okay, so the plot is Channing Tatum wants to help out this down and out kid, so he gets him a job at the strip club where he's like the headlining stripper. But he's like, the kid's sister disapproves, and he tells the kid's sister, "Don't worry, like I know about this business is sleazy, but I know about it. I'm gonna take care of your brother, right?" And then of course shenanigans ensue. But you also like learn about Mike and his life and how he has bigger goals, but he's kind of stuck and doesn't know how to get out of the stripper lifestyle. In which case, just means like cash on hand as opposed to like long-term financial security. And then also the personal dynamics between the brother and the sister and him. And it was like a really good movie. It was an amazing script. And like what I liked about it, when I say that it's genreless, is certain times you think it's going to be like a romantic comedy, and certain times you think it's almost going to be like a crime caper around all of the like the money and drugs that are like just like floating around the strip club. So it's like comes really close to this space, but it doesn't. And I like that. And then, of course, there's also like there's some awesome stripping routines. There's no frontal nudity. I'm just saying this movie's totally rated R, and like they're like almost 100% naked men compared to like, for instance, like it's been so long since I've seen this movie, but that Demi Moore movie Striptease, which is kind of like goofy over the top kind of comedy. Like this is actually like the tone is like, this is actually like a serious like dramedy about one person who has dreams about his life. And there was just so much more to this movie than I ever thought. And I think that it doesn't fit anywhere. And of course, that's pretty much Soderbergh's death nail, right? In most of his movies.
I think I must have been distracted by the male stripping because I remember not liking it. I missed all the plot. Like, I didn't feel like it was written very well, but I might have been distracted.
We named Magic Mike.
There are some really cute guys.
That is an amazing name. Maybe I should check out. Oh, it was about male stripping. Never mind. So that's about the extent of me caring.
Well, I watched it because Matthew Bomer's in it. He's the guy from White Collar. Uh-huh. And I always thought he was really cute. And
you always wondered what his package looked like.
No, but
his role isn't that. He's not that big.
No,
he's
has a really teeny tiny role, which kind of was disappointing.
Yeah,
too,
there's like a stripper entourage, and he's one of them. But there's also little Soderbergh things that I don't like bad lighting and stuff that he keeps in for sort of French New Wave reasons that I don't understand.
Sounds familiar.
But other than that, I was greatly impressed.
You need to watch the second one and report back and see if it's better. Because I have not seen the second one just because I didn't enjoy the first one. Yeah.
I was turning around on Channing Tatum as an actor after Foxcatcher. He's really good in that.
I like Channing Tatum. I haven't drunk completely imbibed the Kool-Aid, but
I also liked 21 and 22.
Yeah, that's where I liked it.
Yeah,
those were hilarious. And
those
I did not
shockingly
watch
good.
I didn't watch the original show, so I don't know how much it cannibalizes the original show. But
I like fans of the original show are up in arms. They're like, they're not taking this seriously. I'm like, it's a show about adult cops who infiltrate a high school.
Well, and like, Johnny Depp and I don't remember the other guy that plays in the original show. Like they come back in 20, yeah. The first one. That was hilarious.
For about 3 seconds.
Yeah. So, Channing Tatum.
Oh, and he was really good. And This Is the End.
Step Up.
Isn't that where you got to start?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a dancer.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And the other thing, too, in Magic Mike is, like, you will see him do, like, some amazing, like pop and lock dance routine.
Yeah, see, that's where I got distracted.
Yeah, it's not amazing. Well, this kind of relates to things that are happening in pop culture now because, like, he and his wife just did the lip sync show.
I know. I need to watch that episode. I saw that.
I heard it was really good.
She did one of the routines that he does in the Magic Mike movie.
Nice.
So there's that.
Interesting.
And I can tell you, just because this relates to Star Wars, I like Channing Tatum in Jupiter Ascending, which is this big, schlocky, over-the-top, makes-no-sense sci-fi movie. And
yes.
Everything that people said about The Force Awakens, I think, is probably true of Jupiter Ascending. And everything that people said about Jupiter Ascending, why it's bad, I think is true of Star Wars Force Awakens. And
well, that's an interesting debate that we don't have time for.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh, I think you just opened a can of sci-fi worms over there.
Put it down.
Wah, wah.
Corrections! Do you guys have any corrections?
No, I thought we were practically perfect in every way.
I had one, but I forgot. Oh, well. I'll do a correction in a year from now.
You can hear that?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Oh. Nope, totally fine.
I'm going to correct that. That's like small exchange I just had with Amanda. And we're improvising, so I don't have any corrections. I would write those down beforehand. And we're improvising, so I didn't write anything down.
No writing down.
All right, perfect. And for more information about African American History Month and improvisation and bad weather, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
The theme music is by
Adam Dean.
All right, next week.
African American History Month.
For sure. Heard there's this musical called Hamilton. Oh, wait, that doesn't have anything to do with African American
History. Well, there are African Americans in the play.
Involved.
Yeah.
Is that it? Did we do it?
Nothing blew up. I'm kind of disappointed.
I think we did. I don't know.
We made a good effort at.
Yeah, we tried. It could have gone better.
I think it was all right. J.D. Robb thought. Yeah, when you said you watched 20 minutes of X-Files and stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Really surprised because it's like just like this close to a romantic urban fantasy show.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's like Moonlighting, but with...
I didn't watch that either.
Aliens, right? It's like...
I've never been a big Aliens fan, so I think that that's what... Because all my friends watch it when I was in college. They're like, I gotta be home, X-Files is on. I'm like, all right.
I got one. Ha! It's the book I just finished. It's called Radiance by Catherine M. Valente. And it's about...
You wish there was a sequel to this?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Yes. Ha!
Getting us back on
track. Feeling good. I kept like doing this mental checklist of like, you know, books that would be cool sequel. Anyway, this is going to be a tickle my fancy part maybe next week, but I guess I'll skip that now. Basically, it's an Art Deco, Deco Punk mystery science fiction space travel novel set in like, I believe the like early 70s, but like the entire solar system is inhabited. Like people went out in space in like the 19th century, and it's all about like making movies and like silent film still exist. And all that kind of stuff. And it was this really neat, like, universe that she created where, like Pluto was full of, like, lotus eaters. And it was colonized by Americans. And the Chinese and the Russians split, like, Mars. And so, like, the you know, and there's a lot of symbolism about the names of everything and, like, how it relates with, like, Greek and, like, mythology and all that kind of stuff. And it was this really cool, like world that she set up. And it'd be really neat to, like, go back at some point. Especially since they set up the idea of like alternate universes in it. Pioneer spoiler alert. I wish Creepshow had decent sequels. Oh!
What? What's Creepshow?
Well, Amanda.